30th of September, and overall, the ones that were below the projected amount of 244 million, the major ones on those will be the IFMS. For one reason, some of the reasons are, obviously, as you may be aware, Chair, that there were changes in key management on the IFMS team, so they are restructuring the plans, as well as based on Digi's directive to ensure that we obviously check what we are paying for versus what was billed, because some of them obviously looking at, for example, the way the project was outlined. So the payments have ceased since August 7. To date, Chair, the internal audit is the first point of call where before the payments are made, they will be checked. So hence the 40 million will be because of those second checks that needs to be done. The second one, Chair, is on 28 million in terms of the OCPO. Again, it was in terms of key management changes where terms of reference had to be revised on certain instances. The affected projects are listed below, as well as the cancellation of the media buying and print for the triple PFA regulations. The continuation of various significant changes will be on the NDPG, which is the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant, the 125 million. Again, that was for due to service providers, certain contracts that have since ceased, as well as the non-compliance with DORA and NDPG framework requirements. The last one, Chair, on the major variances is the 44 million for the second quarter of the 230 million that was surrendered back to the NRF as relating to the jobs fund, and that was is part of the AE&E process. The second to last slide on finance, Chair, this one focuses on the variants and adjustments that for the department require parliamentary approval. The first two bullet points relate to the 10 billion of SAA, the 4.7 being what is appropriated through the our minister's MTPPS speech, as well as the 5.2 billion that has since been paid to SAA under Section 16. The last two bullet points is for the self-financing that will require the parliamentary committee to approve, which is on Program 2 for the emoluments attachment orders. That is done in terms of the funds will be paid to the NRF, and the 5% commission will therefore be paid to the supplier per the agreement with the supplier. As well as the last one, Chair, was on the 24 million because we couldn't meet the ceiling that we had on compensation. We requested a transfer from goods and services of about 24 million from various programs, and the reasons obviously for not meeting our commitments on COE are listed as one of them obviously will be the over than expected 5.5%, which we had initially used previous year's figures in terms of adjusting or costing it for the current financial year. The last slide, Chair, on finances is basically just showing the table between which programs had variants and shifts. Obviously, that relates to the previous slides in terms of just focusing on the ones that require parliamentary approval, which will be part of what is summarized in that slide. Thank you, Chair. I will hand over to Laura for the performance information.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you so much, Chair. I will be equally succinct. The department, in terms of quarters one and quarter two, we achieved 75.51% of our targets in quarter two, which equals 74 targets were achieved of our total number of targets due for reporting, which was 98. This was in comparison to a total of 75.82% of our targets that we achieved in quarter one. Targets that were partially achieved and not achieved in quarter two amounted to 14.29% and 10.20% respectively, in comparison to 7.69% and 16.48% in quarter one. Just to assure the committee that as an annual report, we report achieved and not achieved, but during the quarter we do reflect the partially achieved and not achieved, and this is in respect of the CFO and myself better aligning planning and expenditure and performance, so that we can see where there's been expenditure, has there been performance, even if it's partial. So our key challenges, you can see the slide I've provided you has given you a breakdown of our actual programs, and as you will see it is evident in the illustration that Program 5, which consists of the OAG and OCPO, and Program 7, which is the pensions achieved below National Treasury's minimum performance variance of requiring them to achieve greater than 80% of their total number of targets reported in the quarter. The committee has been provided with detailed and specific information on each of these underperforming indicators, as well as the reasons for underachieving and our action plan. Suffice to say that the predominant reasons for underperformance across all of our indicators are resource constraints due to resource constraints continue to negatively impact on National Treasury's performance, and often it requires for us to reschedule planned projects and delivery, but is not required for us yet to suspend or cancel any projects at this time. Delay in finalization of Treasury regulations due to a greater stakeholder consultation has resulted in a number of dependent indicators having to be rescheduled. Indicators that are dependent on third parties in particular, and this is particularly relevant in OCPO, who are highly reliant on a continuous and dynamic relationship between themselves and third parties and departments, other departments in particular, though that engagement has been delayed due to resource constraints in the third party's environment. And this has resulted, you will see, in delays in a number of finalizations of reports. So although Treasury has completed the work, the final report has not yet been delivered. And in respect of Program 7, only 50% of their targets have been achieved, and that is a direct result of poor data integrity of client information uploaded into the system by third parties. I want to assure the committee that National Treasury has instituted a very stringent program that not only monitors the annual performance plans that are quarters performance that is planned, but we equally now are uptaking the mitigation action plans of the underperformance in a previous quarter and monitoring its delivery in the next quarters to ensure that we actually do address the underperformance and ensure that that's addressed. I'll leave it here to DG and hand over back to you.
Thank you, Chair. The last part would be then to just request Najwa to just take us through the jobs fund and this slide in particular, the colorful slide, and then from there we will then, Chair, with your permission, take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Earlier on there was a question about analysis of the money that has been put in for the jobs fund and what has been the result of that money. And so in reporting on that, the first number to look at is the 6.1 billion. So we've allocated 6.1 billion rand in grant funds to projects, and it has been allocated to 117 approved projects. These projects range across a number of sectors. They range across a number of economic sectors. And the key sectors are agriculture, training and capacity building, and education, finance, manufacturing, ICT, community, social and personal services. The important thing to note here is that what has that 6.1 billion done for us? So 6.1 billion rand is public money. In the way in which the Jobs Fund has been structured, that 6.1 billion has allowed us to leverage or crowd in an additional 8.6 billion rand from our project partners. Our project partners are primarily the private sector, NGOs, and a small bit of that is other public entities. So key to note is that this grant is different in that it is a matched funding grant and that we use public money to attract additional funds towards job creation. So 6.1 billion leveraged 8.6 billion. Coming to the issue of jobs, how many jobs have we created thus far? The target for the Jobs Fund was set at 150,000 jobs to be created. What we have done, though, is because we recognize that in respect of creating jobs in the economy, you have to intervene both on the supply side as well as on the demand side. So on the supply side, you are trying to improve the match between unemployed young people and the jobs that employers are offering. We refer to those jobs as placements. The number that you see there is 54,769 permanent positions. That essentially means that those were vacant positions which existed within the economy, and through the projects and the work that they have done, they have been able to take unemployed young people primarily and match them to those vacant positions. On the demand side, where we work with business incubation, new jobs are created, and a new job for the Jobs Fund is defined as a job that didn't exist before in that organization, but through the use of the grant, the organization has been able to, that business has been able to grow, and in growing, they were able to bring on board additional resources. From those new jobs, the new permanent job number to date is 100,000 new jobs. So, and in this number, I am not counting the short-term jobs. And these jobs that I am referring to here, honorable members, are sustainable jobs. The jobs are not EPWP type of jobs. They are not community works types of jobs. They are sustainable new jobs that have been created. You will also see that further impact that we've had as the Jobs Fund is that 208,000 people have been able to complete various training programs, whether it be work readiness or technical training, in order to better position them to take up vacant positions within the economy. So in a nutshell, we've used public money to crowd in private sector money primarily and to direct that towards job creation. Our ultimate target was 150,000 jobs. You will see that at present, if you take the new jobs plus the vacant jobs that did exist, we've created more than 150,000 jobs. And in addition to that, many people have been given the opportunity to go through a training program that then facilitated them better being able to then find that job in the economy. Thank you, Chair.
You done? One more member, you've got it. Just on this last page, on the 4th of July, Mr. Stephen Kersel made an announcement the morning, 8 o'clock. It was televised on SABC2 about 1 million internships over 3 years. Does that filter in somewhere here, or is it totally apart? You also mentioned it was part of the CEO initiative. but somehow it must dovetail. I'm just throwing this in, over members to you. Questions? None? Thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Chair. Cheers. All right. Let's not take us. Yeah, the first one is you've underspent $44 million in the jobs fund. But you also say you've far exceeded your target. Instead of 150,000, you far exceeded the number of jobs you've created. If you can just explain that. That's the first one. I'm sure we can include the issue that we've had earlier on that we wanted to ask on the SAA issue. What is the way forward in terms of the challenges that SAA is facing? Whilst we acknowledge and agree and accept that they have got the expertise, they've got the knowledge, they've got it all at the moment, they are well on the road to wanting to make a difference and turn SAA, but the problem on the one hand is the debt and the high cost of that debt that they are paying. How can we assist them, even if it means rather giving them a loan? We don't have to give them the money that we are doing. Let it be a loan, equity. We can, you know, there's something we can do so that they can, you know, start off on a level playing field and then take us to the new heights. That's what I think. My problem is this: in some very key areas, you seem to have underperformed. Very, very key areas. And I'll give you an example. Number of monthly expenditure feedback reports, 104 out of 135. There is some more serious ones that I actually picked up here in terms of your SCM policies and processes. Your electronic quotation system, you've only achieved 1 out of 5 targets. Your number of businesses processes defined for SCM, only nothing, absolutely nothing. And that is especially when we're talking about the SCM problem. And, you know, Treasury's been in the media for the wrong reasons. They've been in the limelight for the wrong reasons. And maybe I should touch on that if you could just give us an indication of what is happening with all these allegations at Treasury that we violated all the SCM processes and policies and which we've lost a whole lot of money in awarding and payments without documents and invoices. And maybe you should tell us what you're doing to try and have a repetition of that. Okay. I'll stop there, Chair, for now.
Thank you, Honorable Sikunyani.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My first question is with regard to indicators not achieved, with reasons, maybe specifically two, the one on tax and the public finance one. A target of 40 and the actual is 21, and with public finance, 135 and 104 achieved. My question would be, is it because we set, say, unrealistic targets, which are too high and unachievable? Because when you look at the issue of public finance, the reason is process completed. However, subsequent to the 15 days, stipulated 15 days to respond sent to the department and subsequent to the receipt from receipt to response and to the. But I just would like to know what your take is with regard to that, because I think this is one area of public finance which we should really be achieving the target. And then in terms of tax, the reason here is that the number of papers published is demand-driven. That then, are we then setting too high targets for ourselves, which results in them not being not being achieved? And then also, maybe like my colleague, in terms of the job fund, it is commendable, obviously, that, you know, especially because you have indicated that the private sector has come on board and helping with the filling of all those vacant permanent posts, plus the other permanent jobs that were created. But my question would be then, in terms of those 208 or 49 people completing training and those who are completing internships, is employment guaranteed for these people? It's a very huge number and very encouraging, but my question is, are they guaranteed employment? Thank you, Chair.
Any other questions? Honorable Kachler.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few questions, if I might, for clarity. On slide 2, your last line there, National Revenue Fund payments, we have a 0% expenditure on that. I see initially there was a virement, and it was adjusted downwards quite severely, and now there's still a 0% spend on it. What's the story on this one? Is there some just normal logical reason why this is the case, or why is this sort of just ground to a total halt? Then on slide 6, self-financing expenditure, 22.5 million. Now, I have the same question that I asked earlier in the day. If it's self-financing, why are we financing it? It's a contradiction in terms. So just explain to us, if you're going to spend 22.5 million on these things, where does the self-financing come back? Is it set off against this expenditure somewhere, or is it received and itemized somewhere else? Does it fall into some other category altogether when it comes back as some kind of revenue? Why does it not reflect? I mean, it should, to me, you should show expenditure and income together, and one sets in, off against the other, especially when it's self-financing. So you could maybe just address me on that one. And then, on, doesn't have a number, this slide, but it's in sequence, it would be slide 9, headed indicators not achieved with reasons. What are the financial implications of that non-achievement? I imagine there's going to now be some additional cost involved because of the failure to achieve. If you have to redo something or go back and revisit it or do something else, surely there's then going to be something else that has to happen. I'll just explain perhaps. In the first line, the corporate services, you know, the action plan is an additional dedicated implementation resource has been allocated to resolve delays and accelerate delivery. Now, presumably that comes at a cost. So this is now a cost on top of the original cost that you budgeted for this. And you haven't achieved the target now. You've got to apply more money to it to achieve the target you should have achieved initially. Where's that factored in? Surely this has a sort of compounding effect right the way through, and we end up with an additional on, over-the-top kind of cost to fix the problems caused by non-achievement. And then I just wanted to ask the same sort of question when it comes to, this is another slide without a number, the one with lots of colored hexagons in it. When we speak, for example, of all the people who are trained, I'm just trying to find 208,000 people completed training. Now, are those included elsewhere in here with numbers of people who are now employed, with jobs created? Is there an overlap in these numbers that's not reflected here? So it might just change the picture a little if we looked at it slightly differently. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any more questions? Sheila?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the Treasury for the input. I just want to assure the Director General that the improvement in the performance of the South African Airways is not just the responsibility of the SAA board and management. It is our collective responsibility, and we think we should support these people and make sure that we actually get ongoing regular reports so that we're able to do our part as lawmakers.
I also want to say, just like we accept the newness of the board and the CEO of SAA, we also acknowledge that you, DG, you are a new DG, and we need to give you that support and that space to do what we expect you to do. And I would like, not today, in the future, for yourselves to come and make a proper presentation on the progress made in the integrated financial management system to assure us how much you have put effort on making sure that it works, because I think it's a very good project. It was just an unfortunate mishaps that happened to it, just to make sure that we really get it working. And also the consequence management of those who have seen, and how much have we managed to get back to the fiscus, because we need to do that. Also on the office of the chief procurement officer, I would like to know, in the spirit of transformation, are there any evergreen contracts? What are we doing about that? And what are we doing in making sure that in the future we don't have that? Because to me, that these are the things that actually buzz economic growth, because they prevent new entrants into the economy, new players. And I would like to know how much is set aside for women and the youth. I don't expect this answer today, because I want it to be properly and clearly. We will not cloud it with any other, just these two items. I also want you to deal decisively with this office of the chief procurement officer, because, you know, if you have a situation where the economy is not growing, where private sector is not investing enough, government must. We are a developmental state, and in a developmental state, government must intervene, and intervene effectively. So things like delays and all other stories in this one is really setting us back. Thank you.
Done with your questions, Chair?
No, my question is a matter of emphasis on Honourable Member Shofes Tole's input. Actually, the underlying message, as all of us are concerned about resuscitation of SAA, for a turnaround of SAA, indeed we must commend you for starting correctly. New structures and new COE. Oh, CEO. And we also have a feel of the quality CFO. We have a feel. Yesterday we actually wanted to know what is it that we're putting this money into, and how is it going to benefit government. But you can't just put money in scobbled up and then there's no benefit. We would like to see benefits coming from it. Now, the underlying message is, how are you supporting them? You can't support and at the same time not supporting. Does it make sense? But also, if you don't support, you know we're going to lose still as government in terms of the guarantee, losing the guarantee. So, which one is better? Which one is a better devil? Supporting and at least putting these ones at par so that they can start, you know, turn this thing around and they start contributing towards this radical radical economic transformation? Or do just put money that is gobbled up and there's nothing, no difference, it doesn't make any difference at all? So I think, how are you supporting them? We would want, would like to see you supporting them appropriately, if that is the better word to use. You can't support and not support. You know? All right. And then, maybe I should leave it here. It's about the support. You started, can't do things in half. Things done in half, they're never done. Started, got to give them. They say it's a steward.
Mm-hmm.
Give them the right foot steward so that they can
Mission
take
forward.
Off. Yeah. In Africa, that is it. There's a word. What is it? The word foot steward or that? Poor steward, yeah. Yeah, you can't just, you've got to propel them forward and leave them. Because you have capacitated people there. We also checked on people with aviation experience. We found that now they have, as compared to previous situation where people who did not have capacity were given this. But also I must express my serious concern on the under expenditure on the job fund. Doesn't make sense. Government says these are our priorities and allocates money to assist itself in terms of job creation. And you come and sit here from the very people who are analyzing the other department's expenditure. I was supposed to lead by example. You still have an expenditure in this very critical program. I know you came. When you came, we were all excited. We thought, hey, things were happening. The next thing, the report was not accurate, because now we see an under expenditure. We're not happy about that one. Maybe it's an emotional statement. Let me say we are disturbed by that. No, we are disturbed by failure by this department to comply with the law. But also, I don't know whether you've given us a conversion of your 44 million. What percentage is that? Because when you give us information on this figure, you must also give us a percentage, because that one clearly tells a story. What percentage is that? Because there's also treasury norm that we are supposed to comply with. So we're not very happy. You must show seriousness. When government says this is a priority, it means you've got to put all your energy there. We hear the story, but there's an under expenditure. We think you could have done better. We don't want to say an under expenditure on job creation, because that's God. That's government's priority.
Yes.
So. Yeah, I thought I must express myself. We're not happy at all. I think we expect an improvement. Let's work differently. Doesn't matter what it takes, just to show commitment to assisting government to achieve on its commitments to job creation. There's money. And if the people out there can hear that there's money and they're sitting there, they don't have jobs, can see, they will do it for government. And you must know, the blame then will be on one person, the one who is the program manager, who would have failed to do exactly what he must do. Have you seen those people who are still hungry out there? Have you seen them? And there seem to be many, instead of us reducing them. That's poverty. So if we've got budget, it must work for that purpose for which it was budgeted for. All right, Honourable Member Imam.
Sorry, I just thought, you're giving us some fantastic figures here, 150,000 jobs created and 200,000 jobs created exceeded your targets and everything. Can you give us some meat into that, please? Can you just break it down? Where did you create this job? Where specifically? Which area? And something, because you know previously we found that the jobs performance wasn't giving us data that was credible. So if you can just give us a little bit more meat on that, it'll help us. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. SOA will appear before the Standing Committee of Finance next week on the quarterly report. I saw the program of the Standing Committee. Just for you, if you are available, you can go and attend that meeting. DJ, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe just starting on the SAA, as indicated earlier on in the previous session, I think, Mr. Shigimam, you're right. you know, we have to look at this very closely and allow ourselves to explore options and understand what those options mean. You know, and maybe even, you know, learn from Eskom what you did with changing our debts, you know, to equity in the last time. So we should look at various options, because I guess the committee agrees with us that SAA has to function, has to work, and the support. We will continue supporting them. We'll continue. We meet them on a weekly basis currently. Our teams go to them every week, Tuesdays or Wednesdays, and engage with them, because it's only when we understand and that we will know how to assist them. So we'll continue that and continue to follow the 10 billion rand that currently is with them. From the previous session, the money remains ring-fenced. We are trying to look at creative ways of them meeting their obligations, but I think it will be irresponsible of us for SAA and even for us to use the ring fence money for other things, because we have to come back to you. But in the same line, it's also important to note that we have to assist them, reschedule some of the payments in terms of the payment schedule. We've got a program. Once Parliament has agreed to this appropriation, at least the second part, because the Section 16(1) is gone. They've got the money already, the 5.2. The difference of 4.7, we've got a schedule going into March. We have to work it out and understand, and based on the cash flow of government broadly, we'll have to agree once Parliament has appropriated that, agree how and when they are going to get that insofar as their working capital requirements is. Because I think them stabilizing their finances is going to be critical. And there are short-term measures, Mr. Sheikh Imam, that they have to engage immediately on. Some cost containment that's basic that they must just cut down so that they can start clawing back the kind of expenses that you know, that they have to deal with. So I think it's important, Honorable Shock, that we give you feedback and report on an ongoing basis, and I'm happy that now this matter is now on the appropriations committee also as on the radar. And again, we will have to, as we inform the standing committee on finance, we should do the same, and actually update you at the same time, so that we are comfortable that SAA is truly on the right track. The Yes initiative is an initiative that started last year through a collaborative effort between ourselves as government and labour and business. And there's that agreement and understanding that a million young employment opportunities for young people will be created over a three-year period, and that this initiative, obviously, business wanted and the government to come to the party with some incentives. You will remember that the youth employment tax incentive, they are playing the space. Now, these are separate interventions that have been made. But you might find that some entities that are currently already playing in the jobs fund arena are already playing in the youth. But the 1 million is outside the target. The target that jobs fund has is totally different from. So these are two initiatives that I think should be supported one way or the other. I've got colleagues who will respond to some of the questions. We note the unhappiness, Honourable Chair, of the underspending in the quarter on the jobs fund, and Najwa will talk to that also. Now, insofar as the CPO is concerned, the IFMS program is concerned, we will certainly have to put a report together and to come to the committee. As the CFO indicated earlier on, after the first engagement, and we must appreciate the focus that this committee has had on when the report was first made available, or internal audit report, then we engaged with you, because we're able to direct us to the right issues that you should be focusing on. And Honorable Sigmam, you did say that some of them are in the media. I think as soon as we come back to the committee, we'll specify and indicate what we have done. I mean, I had to do big things as I started. Stop payments, for instance, and stop all payments, and say all payments will be looked, audited, not only audited, but looked at very closely,
so that our internal audit, including the finance department, can verify that this payment is intended for what it is. So we've done that. We met some of the program management unit, PMU players, some companies in there. We engaged with them to try and understand what exactly is happening. As you all know, we got new people involved. But however, because of the nature of this project, it is complex, it's huge, and it's important that we give you full feedback in terms of what we need to do to get it up and running. The steering committee is functional now, at least that's made up of GPSA and CETA and ourselves. So we at least we are focusing ourselves on the right direction. And I think it's important that this program succeeds. And it was obviously through your insistence that we do things differently. And I think we've got a lot to report. As much as, and including the OCPO, I think, as you correctly say, we'll have to come back to you properly and clearly in terms of what interventions are being made in terms of this important function that you perform. I will ask Slindile and Laura to just take us through some of the broad achievements and the challenges that we have and explain them in detail around slide 3 in particular and slide 7 as the question was around self-financing and the NRF payments. Thank you.
I remember, I think the first slide where there was a question on the NRF, if I may start with that. National Treasury's budget is categorized into two, one being for the vote as goods and services and the classification, which is within our control, the overspending and the underspending, and the bottom one in terms of the statutory amounts. Those are the legislated amounts that the department will not have full control over, in the sense that if you look at the equitable shares, for example, Honorable Member, as well as the fuel levy, those ones hardly change in terms of the direct transfers. However, the debt service cost and the NRF payments are subject to the underlying, if there are exchanges in foreign exchange, it will have a direct impact on what the budget was. The NRF specifically will be for the GFECRA account, which is the Golden Foreign Exchange Contingency Reserve Fund, because of the revaluation losses. Hence, you will see that for the quarter, we don't budget for it for the quarter, but it's an annual budget. And for the specific quarter two, because of the revaluation losses that are conducted by the Assets and Liabilities Division, we had to pay those losses. So hence, we just said instead of just putting a minus 100%, it was 0% impact on what was budgeted for that particular quarter. With regards to, if I may go, just explain on the jobs fund. For all our significant variances, the overall 244 million chair will be what was budgeted for in terms of drawings that we have aligned for the quarter versus the actual spending. So on the jobs fund, as much as it says, as I've said, that when we looked at, we sit with jobs fund to look at what is achievable and what is not. For the particular quarter, the 44 million will be when we were performing our actual versus what was addressed or what was aligned as a drawing for that particular quarter. Because one of the key reasons they would underspend is that when they have a jobs fund operating guidelines, which have stringent rules in terms of what must be achieved before they disperse the funds. So because some of those criteria were not met, hence, obviously, we asked them or we said with them in terms of they had to realign. You may find that for the court it could be an underspend, but going forward, because of the achievements, and also we have since revised our drawings based on the public finance requirements. So you'd see that those accounts would vary based on the actuals versus what we had initially budgeted for. It does not necessarily mean that at the end of the year the department will either over or under. It's just our over and under for each quarter is aligned to what has been drawn. Hence, we usually have revised drawings. On the unspent self-financing, Honourable Member, on that slide, you would see that we've just picked up the items that would require approval of Parliament. And what therefore happens in that account is that when the emoluments, if I can call them the garnishee orders, are performed on each individual, the state employees, So if the service provider picks up the overpayments or the underpayments or illegalities thereof, the amounts or the differences are actually sent to the NRF. So the department would not necessarily have a direct budget for it. So that is why we're saying there is that item that we require parliamentary approval for. So how it will be is that the 5% that is given to the service provider does not come directly to the department, but it's taken from the NRF account. So that is the reason that it will be put in that. I think in terms of addressing the specific questions, again, just to reiterate on the words that the DG has said on the IFMS, we have since obviously meet him on a weekly basis just to provide status update. We are also engaging with the service providers because, as I've said, the internal audit, all the payments, IFMS related, are pre-audited before they are paid. So obviously with all those stringent processes and tightening our controls would have an impact on what we had initially put as our drawings in terms of budget versus actual check. I hope that clarifies the questions. Thanks. Oh, sorry. I think on the Evergreen contracts, and that we have that one, Honourable Member, is noted, and it has been raised by the Auditor General as well. We have conducted a review of contract management. The report has been finalised by the internal audit. It is just going to be forwarded to the DG for him to obviously. Then we implement the action plans that have been noted. The set aside for women and youth, Honourable Member, can we please come back to you on that one? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, on the Evergreen contract, I think maybe I must mention, Lindsay, I don't know if, I think there's one or two that we picked up, because some of them, remember, and I can comfortably say from the day I started acting until today, I think I've indicated on two contracts in particular that in our own classification are Evergreen contracts in the Treasury, because we've got a few where I've said, because the nature of such contracts is such that you get a memo, and I'm being blunt and open here, Chair. You get a memo that a few days before the contract ends, and you have to approve extension. And you find that this contract could have been maybe in the system for a couple of years. Because if you don't approve that day and extend it by a year, or in some cases be another 3 years or something, then the systems can fall apart, especially if you look at how the cash management, you know, it will be like your back office kind of functions that no one will understand and even see. Because if you don't sign on that day and the contract is extended, the whole cash management system of government can fall apart, as an example. And because if you check, this contract might have been in there, and it's not that anything is wrong about it, just that it's been there for years. So what I've done, I have said, for instance, instead of extending it for 3 years, I will extend it for 1 year, and I want monthly or quarterly report as to what we are doing to ensure that this contract really comes to an end after the year. One, in terms of sizing the market up, in terms of checking who else, because some of these contracts are such that it can be one or two people in the country or even a few companies that will be able to perform these functions. So you really want to open up this space for other new players. So we've done that, I think, once or twice in the last 6 months. And I guess, as the chair said, I mean, as the CFO indicated, that we are looking at that like hawks to understand exactly what is in that space, because I don't think it's in anybody's interest that there should be things like Evergreen contracts, whether in SAA, as earlier on it was mentioned, and I know SAA saved up with this matter, and they did mention yesterday, including our own contracts that fall in that category in the Treasury.
Thank you so much. I'll just focus on those indicator underperformances that were particularly mentioned. In terms of...
Somewhere there's a cell phone.
In terms of the tax indicator, Honourable Member, that's a very good example of the challenges that we have in articulating indicators that are unpredictable, but that are reflective of work streams that are very important to National Treasury. So the research reports there are done in partnership with a third party and are often as a result of key events that happen in the period. So they're a response to what is happening in our operating environment, which makes it too variable. What we do in that case is we use a trend in order to predict the number of targets that we set. Generally, that trend will then be validated by the end of the year. It may be, and generally often happens, that your quarterly targeting might not be as precise, but that by the end of the year, we would then have reflected the trend. Hence, you will see that in this quarter we've underperformed, but we expect by the end of the year to have complied with that target. In terms of the public finance target, where we needed to give 135 feedback reports and only did 104, this is an example of the constraints that National Treasury is currently under. Our unpredictable and challenging operating environment is placing huge additional work requirements on a number of our divisions, and public finance in particular is one of those divisions. The result is that often when you're having to deal with these emergencies, the general or the regular work then is not always completed on time. However, it is always completed. So the reports have been drafted. They simply were not drafted in our required 15 days. And if my recollection is correct, the majority of those were drafted within 2 days of the deadline. However, as a custodian of compliance, we are non-negotiable on compliance to our indicators. So even if a unit or a division has complied only within 48 hours, we still determine it as underperformance in terms of the articulation of that indicator. The other indicator on this area that was raised is around corporate services as an example. In the main, we have been successful in reallocating resources to those performance areas within a division where we are underperforming. However, we recognize, and it's an issue that is receiving attention from the DG and corporate services together, is that as we are being placed under pressure around resource constraints, positions are not being filled, the ability for us to refocus or reallocate skills is becoming smaller and smaller. And we predict that this then is going to affect the actual performance of some of our programs. What we are currently doing is undergoing a re-evaluation on a number of our programs in preparation for our APP 1890. What we will not compromise on is service delivery. What we may need to compromise on is the scheduling of the delivery of some of our programs, in order to better align it with our constrained resources. If I can then go directly to the questions on OCPO, we recognize the challenges in OCPO, and that is, and we stated them up front. Both OCPO and OAG are undergoing specific attention from those heads of divisions to address the lag in performance. However, I do want to indicate, in the main, the underperformance is within a variance of 10% of the required delivery. So although it may appear, for example, in the number of proposals for strategic sourcing opportunities, we didn't deliver any, we only were required to deliver one. However, there were no proposals made. So if no proposals were made by the DTR departments, then we wouldn't complete that area of work. I do want to indicate again that in the main for these indicators, two things. One, we need to remember that OCPO for us is still a new area of work. So they are still working off the planned work plan of when they were initiated. And with like all new things, in the absence of a baseline, your plans are often overambitious. And so we are in the process with OCPO to better align that initial planning to actual resources, added to which they've obviously under resource constraints, but more importantly, you'll see the majority of that under-delivery is due to outstanding information from other departments. They're highly reliant on third parties, and that is affecting us. The question then we have to ask ourselves is, do we correctly articulate our indicators and not just articulate them and stop at where we no longer have control? But OCPO's indicators are impact indicators for us. And so it's important that we include the next level of actually impacting in this very important area of work.
Thank you very much. I think just to emphasize the point around resource constraints, I think if I had to complain or if I had to approach the National Treasury and say we need resources, I think we are in trouble. We are in trouble because the personal cut that we introduced 10 and 15 billion rands a few years ago, 2 years ago if you remember, addressing the fees must fall, the zero fees increased for the 2 years, really affected because we had targeted compensation of employees' budgets and we reduced budgets. The challenge is, to try to remain within the budget meant, and we always say we should lead by example, meant we had to freeze positions. We have got actors everywhere in the Treasury. The morale is low, and it's affecting our performance one way or the other. And I know because I used to be in public finance, as you know, I used to appear before this committee all the time as the DDG Public Finance. That division alone itself, you've got actors everywhere from your junior staff. And by the way, if in the Treasury you are a deputy director or a director, you are not junior at all. You are responsible. Now imagine if all those positions are actors and it's junior people acting in director positions and they know that in the short to medium term these positions will never be filled. It affects their morale. As an example, assets and liabilities. All four chief directors are all acting. So to a point where I just had to last week just it means if you're acting as a chief director, you still have to do your work as a director. So it's not easy when the resources and this resource constraint, sometimes, and I know, and I'm talking to myself here, because of lack of money, lack of budget, we have cut budgets, and this affects the whole of government. So at some point, we government has to approach this thing differently. We are prepared currently. Medium-term expenditure committee says to the matter, we are meeting on Friday. It is not going to be an easy discussion to discuss among ourselves as medium-term expenditure committee that includes the presidency, that includes DPSA and COGDA, so that by the time Ministers Committee on the Budget engages these matters, we understand them for what they are, because clearly it is a huge challenge, and it impacts across in terms of some of these achievables are things that are basic. It's a report that must be written, but because this particular director, chief director, is stretched across various committees in parliament, across various responsibilities, and within the cluster work in government, we find that physically and humanly, it's not humanly possible in some cases to really do what the basics that they have to do. And because one understands, we have to come here and acknowledge and say, to you as a committee that we are not able to achieve because of resource constraints. In most cases, it is as a result of warm bodies that essentially are not there. And we rely on interns, in some cases, and very junior staff to perform functions. And the way, Najwa, you want to come in at, in terms of...
Thank you, DJ. So just to comment, DJ has spoken about the the YES initiative, the CEO's initiative, and around the internship program. In the Jobs Fund, our guiding principle is that an internship does not equate to a job. So we go beyond an internship. If you contract with the Jobs Fund, you have to be able to place at least 80% of the people that you take through the program. So that is how we are different from the CEO's initiative. In respect of the under expenditure, the CFO has explained that it's a rescheduling of funds. And that rescheduling of funds is primarily as a result of our internal governance, our procedures where we control the budget to such an extent that every quarter when you report on your indicators, if you've not achieved 80% of your indicators, you do not get the next tranche of money. So even if it means I come here and I look really bad, that's okay, but my governance is in place. I think that we are also not immune to what is happening within the labor market. As the Jobs Fund, our projects are at the coal face, and so what is happening in respect of the economy and how investors perceive us, all of those things actually impact. So when you're working with a small business, you've incubated them, they're ready to grow, but at this stage they are reticent to employ additional people because they don't know what is going to happen next. We're also affected by the drought. For example, in the Western Cape region, I said earlier, we have quite a big agriculture portfolio. It was only in November that they indicated water licenses to farmers. That meant that many farmers are going to miss a planting season. How does that relate, translate into our disbursements? Is that those projects would have anticipated in terms of their cash flows that they would require new farming inputs. They will now not purchase those farming inputs because they couldn't put the seed into the ground. That means they will not draw down on their grant. So again, the expenditure is rescheduled. Sometimes, though, what is also happening, because what is happening outside of these walls, is that our project partners have to match our grant money. Things are changing out there. They lose their match funding. They then have to come to the Jobs Fund and say, sorry, we cannot partner with you anymore. There was also a question around the training and the internships and whether employment is guaranteed. As I indicated, we don't just do internships. If we contract with a partner, that partner must have done the analysis and estimated what is the demand from employers in order for them to do the right training that is then converted to a permanent job. The question was put around whether we do some kind of double counting or there's some mixture of numbers. In the Jobs Fund, again, we say no to that. I could have come here and reported and said, you've created, 200,000 jobs. It doesn't help unemployed people, right? New permanent job is because of enterprise development and in growth in enterprises. A placement is into a vacant position by improving. What does happen in terms of the process is you get the training, you might get some internship, then you get a short-term job, on-the-job training, and from that on-the-job training, it is then converted to a permanent job. So that is why we keep the numbers separate. The 200,000 people that have been trained is not sitting in the actual numbers that have been converted to real jobs. So I think that I've explained around under expenditure and how we govern the disbursements, Honorable Chair. So under expenditure in this case is a rescheduling and is a factor of how our governance processes and when we make those disbursements. So under expenditure is not always directly correlated to failure, Honorable Chair. It is really about better controls and also about our projects achieving greater efficiencies. And so while they might have projected they needed X amount of money, through greater efficiencies, as they mature as projects, they no longer require that funding. So there's potential savings that can go towards other projects. The Honourable Member had asked, can we make it real? Where are these jobs? So just an example, we have a project within the informal sector. It's called Mobi Skills. And what does the program do? It addresses unemployment by introducing work seekers into formal employment by connecting unemployed persons with the formal work opportunities via an app. So I'm an employed, I'm a plumber, I register on this app. When I register on the app, in the background, my qualifications are vetted, and so that is then, when I'm placed on that app, you can then go onto the app and you can get yourself a vetted plumber, a vetted electrician, and that is how we help connect those people in the informal sector, in township economies, to what is happening in mainstream economy. Another example of this is where we take young people through a proficiency testing. And within one of our programs, which is called Harambee, more than a million young unemployed persons have been able to go through these proficiency tests. And now, while they might not all have jobs at this stage, they must certainly understand which career track they are more capable of following and where they would meet with success. This program has also been able to leverage their systems and scale up, and that's what the Jobs Fund has catalyzed and has now been able to assist other government departments with their work, like Gauteng government with their Chapel 500. That's another example is where we work with women. It's called the Clothing Bank. They've won the Schwab Award. It was catalyzed within the Jobs Fund. They take women in the township areas. They partner with Pick and Pay, with Truworths, with Woolworths. All that excess clothes that we never know what happens after the 50% sale gets taken. These women are taught how to run a business, their own business, and they sell that, they on-sell that within the townships. So again, empowering women in the informal sector. Members know about Shaduka Black Umbrellas, where we incubate small businesses. We also work in agriculture, where we take smallholder farmers and we take them through an incubation process, and they are then able to grow their farming operations. I think that an example that members might get a real appreciation for is that we have this discussion around SASSA and the payment of social grants. A submission was made to Parliament by the Post Office. The Post Office wishes to partner with a project that was incubated in the Jobs Fund. The partner's name is Community Access to Wireless Retail. What did they do? They used technology, and they enable small businesses to be located within a township and assist township people not to spend that money on transport to go into city areas to get prepaid products such as airtime, electricity, etc., etc. They developed that further. They've now taken that technology, and they have taken that technology into spaza shops, into township areas, enabling spaza shop owners to better manage their business. But in addition to that, give those spaza shop owners additional revenue streams by being able to do these prepaid products. So those are just a few examples of where the money has really gone to and what the money has really catalyzed. Maybe a last one, a project that we did with an asset management firm. So we work in the informal sector, the formal sector, all over the place. We've taken the Jobs Fund money. We have used it as a quasi-guarantee. We said pension funds are still risk-averse, even though the National Treasury has implemented Regulation 28. They are still risk-averse. So we will de-risk for them their investment mandate to invest in SMMEs. By doing that, what we have done on the back of a $75 million guarantee, we've leveraged another additional $600 million from pension funds towards supporting small businesses. That's how real it gets, honourable members.
Sorry, perhaps I can suggest, Najwa, we have developed and produced a full report on the Jobs Fund with significant detail and all of these stories and exactly the impact which we've got ready for SCOF. I will commit to this committee that we will repackage it for this committee and send it through so that it's better if you actually have the document in front of you, because it's definitely that there's some good stories to tell in this work stream.
Thank you. Laura,
it's not a story, it's a proper report. I think Mr. Shikimam's questions were pretty detailed, and I think it's only fair for the committee to take them through the AB. I know this committee has always asked information on Jobs Fund, and I think we have to just find a way, and I'm just paging through it now. What we will do, we will give you just the background of what the Jobs Fund is all about. We will tell you from, you know, what sectors are we involved in, is the jobs fund involved in, and all the information, the examples that Najo gave, we'll have to package it. Which provinces, how many per province, so that you, and then maybe once you have interacted with this report, you may want to then call us again specifically to again talk about this jobs fund, because there's still good things that we're doing, and it's important that we kind of, you know, make it available to you, and then we can then maybe get your guidance on how best to improve the fund, so that for it, you know, to actually just create those extra jobs that are needed.
DG, thank you to you and your team. That lady is very passionate. I can see it. She just carries on. I want to take you to my constituency to motivate people.
Sorry, Chair. I just wanted to comment. The problem we have is with all the good work you're doing, we don't hear about it. We don't know about it. You're not breaking it down, and that's what we want to hear. Because otherwise, there's an impression created. Nothing is being done. We are losing jobs. We're not creating jobs. The money is being spent. Yeah, you're producing the goods. Nobody knows about it.
Good about this meeting is this is a live broadcast. So you actually spoke to South Africa today. Yes. And it's our task to take this message to our sectoral meetings in our constituencies, so that report is going to assist us. Chair. To a follow-up. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to declare, DG, that today I'm very happy with Treasury. You know, it is the happiness on top of yesterday's happiness. But I promise that I will do what the first Secretary of State in the USA has said, that people do not account unless they are made to account. So we are going to be very, very continuous in asking you to come and account. But also, I come from Hoedspruit. It's a small town. And I really talk a lot about your department. And I don't tell them the bad. Even if I'm angry, I tell them the little good that I... But they challenged me. They say, you see, the problem is that you have to go to the president and ask the president to have a spokesperson for government who can actually tell us all the good things that the newspapers don't tell us and that you are telling us. So I might have to send you a statement for the job that I'm doing, because you haven't paid me for anything.
That was a good remark, Chair.
Okay, thank you so much for all the, I would say, responses that you gave. Just to remind you, DG, our work is oversight function over government expenditure. Now, the tool that we use is only one, over or under expenditure. And the value for money impact. So you can tell me the story. I've already seen what I wanted to see. Where there's an under expenditure, I want to emphasize. It says, you can give it your definition. My definition is, work has not been done. Why is this money still there? So I want to, because I'm looking at it through the eyes of the grassroots. That's how they're going to interpret it. So our work is to say, because you've been given money, let this money work and we want to see the impact. So you can imagine, if all this money was used, the impact that you have explained was going to be even more. So that's what we are asking for. Let's use the money in the manner in which the PFMA prescribes. Because over or under expenditure talks to, is an offense, above 2%. It's an offense. So how do you like that? How are you going to explain that? It's an offense. All right? And also it talks to compliance. It's a compliance issue. And then the more they continue to deviate from the Act, DG, one day we're going to ask the minister, because you are the one who accounts to the minister. And this talks to you, okay, for failure to apply consequence management. We will ask the minister, Minister, when are you going to apply consequence manager on your DG? Now, you don't want to push us there. But I'm telling you, this is what it means. So all those that work under, you must make sure that we then don't ask that question from the minister. All right? On contract management, what we've noted is poor contract management. I've been a civil servant from 1981, if I should put it. So you'll see I worked for the then government. That was run according to military order. Either or, you're gone. Compliance was was the issue of the day. And there was no precautionary suspension at the time. There were no unions at the time. All right? Now, on contract management, it's a matter of, it's a procedural matter. I was shocked to hear that people bring a contract a day before to be signed. From what I know, you inform that person 3 months in advance on your intention to retain or not to retain. And it is legislated a day before. Doesn't sound good. That's poor performance. And it sounds unethical. It's like this person waited, you know, to put you in a corner so that you sign by hook or by crook, you sign. But if there's proper monitoring, that thing will not happen. So if we can strengthen our monitoring and evaluation of these contracts. But also, I think one time when we spoke to National Treasurers promised us that they will then train managers on contract management, because the problem with project failures is contract management, which is not properly done. So we will appreciate if this area can be improved. And those who come under the guise that they will, by hook or crook, their contracts will be, they must also face music. This committee is still waiting for the IFMS report. I know it came in, but it's still waiting for the full report. And the sooner we get it, so that we get done with it, the better. We'll appreciate. On SAA, it's clear that National Treasury is closely monitoring the unfolding story of SAA. Now, just to share with you what the public view is, so that you can then, we're not saying that that's what we're saying, because remember, in terms of public, we also listen to what people say, okay? Public view is the failure of SAA is due to political interference. Now, from the public view, I don't have facts. I would then say, acting on behalf of the public, remember we're public representatives, can we request that as you closely monitor, you give SAA and the new leadership space to work. If it's asking for too much, I'll apologize later. But for now, let's give them space to work. But also, indeed, you can't appoint new people, new leadership, and give them a mandate, and you don't support them. It's like, if I may look at it, if I may use an analogy, you don't give birth to a child, and then you leave this child alone. That child will die. So you have to support the child. And earlier on I said appropriately, but I think the right way is properly. The right way is properly. Support them properly. And then give them the space to work. Because honestly speaking, in our interaction with them, you have appointed capacitated people. You know, it's not a hearsay. We have had an interaction with them. Capacitated people. So support them properly. Also making sure that the issue raised on consequence management, indeed, at SAA, that should happen. whether people have retired and they went away with SAA money, can we then speak on behalf of the people there as public representatives? That money must be paid back. We need it. SAA needs it urgently. That money must be paid back. If people have got to go to jail, let people go to jail. That's consequence management. And in our own analysis, privatization of SAA is a no-no issue. No. We've already put money in there. And it is scarce resources that we put in there. And taxpayers' money. So we need to build confidence to the taxpayer again so that they can continue supporting. So it's a no-no to that issue. And then the last one, this is what we've picked up in our interaction with the transformation, that as they enter at an entry point, I think giving SAA a fresh start, it has got to be done holistically. Immediately we need a transformation plan. That's another plan. We need it with immediate effect. Cannot go on like that when we say we are in a new South Africa and we are supporting transformation at its second phase. And it talks to radical transformation. So transformation should also be high in their priority list. And of course, this one also is not negotiable. The appointment, doesn't matter who is being appointed there, that person must be appointed with a requisite skill. If you want the change that you want to see, people with requisite skills. And those people must also, you see, on the contract management, we also see lack of a skills transfer. Yeah? That thing must be monitored closely, and there must be a skills transfer in terms of your radical socio-economic transformation. There must be a skills transfer. Other people must also enter into this industry and also participate. The youth, but with requisite skills. Women with requisite skills. And then the disabled with requisite skills. I think that would be my comment as I round up this interaction with yourself. And then zero tolerance on under and over expenditure. Because the people out there, they can't even analyze it. They say it's corruption. Do you know that? So if you can assist us, we also want to build this trust for government. All right. Thank you very much.
Some of these matters or matters also featured in our report on the revised fiscal framework that we concluded phase one of the processing of the MTPBS. Honourable members, we're going to break for 10 minutes to get something to eat, come back to your desk, and then the meeting will proceed. So we are, it's a working lunch. Co-chair, thank you for that. And then you will go into the last phase of the meeting. Chair will now excuse me for my other engagement in the NCLP. Thank you to the Treasury for this long session from this morning. Thank you.